Hello and welcome to Volume 45, Number 38 of Grapevine, your weekly local news magazine. Brought to you by the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association, this edition is published on Friday, the 19th of September, 2025. Hi, I'm Andrew, your presenter, and I'm joined this week by newsreaders Desney and Margaret. And in the news this week, six people rescued from a Broads cruiser. Plans for a new hospice have been given the go-ahead. Beat officers to clamp down on antisocial behaviour. And a 96-year-old military veteran receives a new medal. All this coming your way during the next hour or so. And so with no birthdays this week, it's straight on to the first part of the news, and it's over to Margaret. Hello, Margaret.
Hello. And we start with the BBC Radio Norfolk is set for another shake-up as a popular weekend show has been axed in favour of a new national show. The long-standing Soul Weekenders, a show hosted by John Leach, has been cut from the schedule. It has been replaced by a new All England programme focusing on the BBC's Make a Difference brand. The new show will launch on Sunday and air between 2pm and 6pm to promote good new stories. Posting on social media, Mr. Leach said, "I'm profoundly grateful to the grace of God for the opportunity to present this show to you for many years. Together we reached incredible heights, becoming the number one programme on BBC Sounds and cultivating a huge, passionate audience that spans not just East but around the UK and beyond. We united thousands of people from diverse backgrounds through the power of music, and you have been a remarkable family of love. I'm told that this is a farewell and not a goodbye, as I will be invited back to the BBC for Soul Specials and Soul Weekenders, but I have no further information to share with you at this moment." In 2023, BBC announced changes to local radio, which saw a number of local programmes axed and replaced with regional-wide shows being broadcast in Suffolk, Essex and Norfolk. The original Make a Difference campaign was launched by the BBC during the COVID pandemic to champion everyday heroes making a positive impact in their local areas. A spokesman for the BBC said, "The new Sunday show takes this mission even further, shining a light on inspiring acts of kindness and the people driving positive change in their own communities on a weekly basis." Chris Burns, head of BBC Local Audio Commissioning, said, "Making a difference is something that has deeply resonated with our audiences since inception. It's a hugely popular and something we really want to champion while prioritising our unrivalled commitment to covering local sport."
Six people, including one who was recovering from recent surgery, have been rescued from a cruiser that ran aground. The drama occurred at around 9:50pm on Sunday when several lifeboat teams were summoned after a boat was stranded and taking on a lot of water on the River Bure in Great Yarmouth. The vessel was tilting to one side and the operation was further complicated due to one of the people on board suffering from pre-existing medical conditions. Two crew members from the Hemsby Broads rescue team boarded the boat and transported five people to a safe mooring in two separate trips and were met by the East of England Ambulance Service. Due to the condition of the boat and concerns for the sixth person, who was recovering from a recent surgery, a boat transfer was deemed too hazardous. as the vessel's stability worsened, it was deemed necessary to airlift the casualty and remaining two crew members from the boat using a rescue helicopter that was on the way. Once all casualties and crew were safely evacuated, Hemsby Broad's rescue returned to a safe mooring to collect the remainder of the team and were eventually stood down at 12:45 a.m. A Hemsby lifeboat spokesman said this rescue was a true team effort. The crew of Hemsby pass on their sincere congratulations and thanks to all emergency services involved. Humber Coast Guard, local Coast Guard teams, the ambulance service and the helicopter rescue crew for their professionalism and dedication. This was a notable rescue of six people who, without swift and coordinated action, would have been in real peril. Thank you to everyone involved.
Beat officers in a Norfolk town have been clamping down on antisocial behaviour and have targeted people drinking in public areas. Great Yarmouth's town centre was identified as a new priority for the police following public and partnership consultations. The town's police force says officers are continuing to do their foot patrols in and around Great Yarmouth town centre to tackle any antisocial behaviour they see, as well as looking into any reports made to them. During just one patrol last week, officers reported three people for a breach of public space protection order for having open containers of alcohol. The latest clampdown follows a new order introduced by Norfolk Police and Great Yarmouth Borough Council in April. It saw a reformed public space protection order introduced, meaning drinking alcohol in public, urinating in public, begging, spitting and riding bikes or e-scooters on paths could see offenders prosecuted or at the very least banned from the town centre for 12 hours. Belongings left unattended in the borough could also be seized under the new PSPO rules.
A soul and funk DJ known for running a festival in Norfolk has died at the age of 81. Chris Hill, who died on September the 11th, pioneered and ran the Caister Soul Weekenders, a DJ event which began in 1979. Until 2019, the event continued to be held in Caister, but now takes place at Vauxhall Holiday Park in Great Yarmouth. This year it is on September the 25th to September the 29th and is called Great Yarmouth Soul Weekender. His long-term event collaborator and music promoter, Brian Ricks, helped him run the festival and many of his other projects. Mr. Hill had a major input into the creation of the British Brit Funk music scene of the late 1970s and early 1980s. He was at the forefront of the Soul Mafia, a set of DJs including Greg Edwards, DJ Froggy, Jeff Young and Robbie Vincent. Mr. Hill would assist in shaping club culture across London and the South East during the late 70s and early 80s. From his days at the Lacey Lady in Ilford to the iconic gold mine on Canvey Island, the musician had a reputation for creating spaces where music wasn't just played, it was celebrated.
More than 8,900 motorists on Norfolk's roads were caught over the speed limit by camera van checks in June and July. Roadside operations by the Norfolk and Suffolk Safety Camera Partnership covered main routes, including the A11 and A47, as well as smaller routes in numerous towns and villages across the county. The biggest speeding hotspot was Thetford, where 819 motorists, 561 in June and 258 in July, were detected to be travelling over the limit. Cameras positioned at the busy Broadland interchange on the A47 at Postwick with Witten on the outskirts of Norwich, clocked 577. On the A11, mobile vans caught the most travelling on the A11 at Snetterton, where 453 were detected. The onset of the busy summer months saw the numbers higher than all the preceding months this year, with 8,965 in total. Camera vans are often deployed on bridges overlooking the carriageway or in laybys to use video speed monitoring tech. Motorist court are sent a notice of intended prosecution, but for the more serious speeding offences, the police may choose to take cases straight to court. Away from the county's two busiest A roads, other locations where a large number of speeding offences were seen were Hopton-on-Sea with 521, Cringleford with 368, and Wyndham with 358.
Two men have been left seriously injured following a bin lorry crash. It happened at 9:15 a.m. on Monday, the 15th of September, in Halvergate Road, Freethorpe, when a silver Vauxhall Astra and a white DAF refuse collection truck collided. Both the driver of the Astra and a passenger in the car, both men in their 40s, were taken to the hospital with serious injuries. The passenger was airlifted to the Norfolk and Norwich University Hospital, while the driver was transported by road ambulance to the James Paget Hospital. The driver of the truck, a man in his 60s, was taken to the hospital with minor injuries. Halvergate Road reopened nearly 9 hours after the crash at 5:50 p.m. Anyone with any information about the collision is being asked to contact the police, quoting reference 100 of September the 15th.
Nine students from Phoenix Karate Schools have returned from the World Championships in Sweden with a haul of medals. The event, held at the Malmö Arena, saw more than 1,700 competitors from 65 federations across 35 nations. Phoenix Karate Schools was represented by nine students who were part of the Kansas Karate England squad. They were chosen for their performances at events across the UK and the European Championships in Warsaw last October. The championships, organised by the World Union of Karate Federations, spanned 5 days of competition in the Kumite, Katar and Kobudo disciplines. And Corey Newton-Adams, Oliver Cashier-Wadhams, Thomas and Henry Lahansel, Kaya Mikorvich, and Zoe, Diana and Andreas Pantel showcased their skills in various categories. Corey managed to secure a bronze in a category with more than 50 contestants. Cashier excelled in her kata, winning gold and following up with two bronze medals in the Kobudo and Team Kumite alongside Zoe. Zoe also clinched a gold medal in long weapons. Kaya secured silver in both the long and short weapons Kobudo categories. Oliver took home a bronze medal in short weapons. Saturday saw Kaya adding another silver in kata. In the under-12s Kumite, Diana won gold for her individual category and a bronze in the team event. Her sister Zoe also secured a bronze in her individual category. Sensal Vivian Trori, a fifth Dan and world chief referee, expressed pride in the team's performance, stating, "Some of the students were disappointed not to return with medals. However, the standard was exceptionally high. I was extremely proud of the whole team, and to return home with three world champions, a triple silver medalist and seven bronze medalists has surpassed my expectations." The Phoenix Karate Schools offer training in Martham, Great Yarmouth, Galston, Hopton, Lowestoft and Oulton Broad.
A 96-year-old veteran in Norfolk has been honoured with a new medal after losing his original ones. Woodland Court Care Home in Galston welcomed a delegation from the Royal Engineers for a special ceremony to honour veteran Gordon Day. The Royal Engineers paid a personal visit to Mr. Day to present him with a replacement serviceman's jacket and medal after his original awards were lost some years ago. The presentation was a testament to his service and the enduring bonds of his military community. The visit was marked by camaraderie and heartfelt smiles as Mr. Day, surrounded by family, friends and fellow servicemen, was formally presented with the replacements. Liz Atkins, General Manager at Woodland Court, said today was about honouring Gordon's service and ensuring he feels the deep respect we all have for him. Witnessing Gordon's smile as he received his jacket and medal was a moment of immense pride for our entire team. It's a privilege to support our residents in such meaningful ways, and this was a day none of us will ever forget.
A real landmark moment has been hailed after plans for a new hospice were given the go-ahead. Planning permission has been granted by Great Yarmouth Borough Council to a scheme to develop a community hospice facility in Galston. The St Elizabeth Hospice had lodged a planning variation application last June to build a community hospice on a 7-acre site at Sidegate Lane in Galston. The land was once owned by East Coast Hospice, which merged with St Elizabeth Hospice in 2023. The facility will include an outpatient and community hub for daycare patients, offering therapy services, a community cafe, and an inpatient facility with up to 16 beds. Judy Newman, St Elizabeth Hospice Chief Executive Officer, said, "We are delighted that our planning application has been approved. This news is a real landmark moment, and we can now move forward with making our vision for a community hospice a reality for the Great Yarmouth and Waveney community. Once more, we extend our thanks to the local community and stakeholders whose insights have shaped our plans. Together, we're working towards greater parity in palliative and end-of-life care for the area. The project builds on the dedication and vision of those who founded East Coast Hospice and will also see St Elizabeth Hospice partnering with the Louise Hamilton Trust as part of a united approach to deliver high-quality and end-of-life services for the local community. Since April 2019, St Elizabeth Hospice has cared for more than 6,000 patients and their families in Great Yarmouth and Waveney through their healthcare and partnership with East Coast Community Healthcare, ECCH. The development of the community hospice facility will build upon and align with the hospice's existing services in the area. Construction is hoped to start in 2026, with an estimated to take up to 2 years for completion. What a wonderful project and so close to so many hearts.
A limbo preventing two new Norfolk schools from being built is placing significant strain on the finances at County Hall, say frustrated councillors. New special schools for Great Yarmouth and Downham Market to take in 270 pupils with special educational needs and disabilities, SEND, were approved in 2023, but work cannot start because the government has yet to stump up the money. Officials at Norfolk County Council have been trying to get confirmation from the Labour government that the money for the schools, which would cost about £20 million each, will be forthcoming. but there is concern that the decisions over the Norfolk schools have been stalled because of the government's plans to announce major reform over SEND funding in the coming months. Penny Carpenter, Cabinet Member for Children's Services, said, "We're still urgently calling on the government to release the capital funding for the two new special schools that were approved nearly 2 years ago. The continued delay in funding these schools for Great Yarmouth and Downham Market is not only affecting our children's education, but is also placing a significant additional strain on our SEND budget because it forces us to rely more heavily on costly independent placements and incur additional travel expenses." Norfolk County Council's total overspend for SEND is expected to hit £183 million next year. While the council is providing specialist resource bases within mainstream schools, it is having to pay millions to private providers and on transport to get youngsters to schools. The planned 2026 opening dates for the schools have had to be pushed back to 2027 at a time when pressure and the costs for specialist school placements is rising. At a meeting of the Conservative-controlled Council's Children's, Families and Communities Select Committee on Friday, September the 12th, James Wilson, the Council's Director for Strategy and Outcomes, said, "Sadly, these schemes are becoming more and more behind where we hoped they would be, which is creating real challenges in the system." The department said it was prioritising decisions on schools due to open in the shorter term.
Flegborough has marked the arrival of a new Little Book Stop, awarded as part of Penguin's 90th birthday festivities. The initiative aims to encourage reading and foster connections by giving villagers and visitors the chance to browse, borrow and exchange books. Bearing the distinctive Penguin logo and stocked with titles provided by the publishers for its launch, the Book Stop was unveiled to villagers, parish councillors and members of the Village Hall Committee. The application was led by Gemma Robbins Flowerdew, who responded to Penguin's advert for book stops, resulting in Flegborough being chosen from more than 2,000 entries. Ms. Robbins Flowerdew said she was delighted by the news and hopes the book stop will become a meeting point where people who might not otherwise meet can connect. The scheme encourages the sharing of books, making reading accessible to all and strengthening community spirit.
A fitness class fundraiser is set to take place on Galston Beach. The event, scheduled for Sunday, September the 28th, aims to raise money for East Anglia's children's hospices. The 45-minute session will include Zumba, toning, stretching and fitness games. Participants are asked to meet next door to JJ's Cafe at 10:15 a.m. with the event starting at 10:30 a.m. People need to book a place by calling Catherine on 07877 338 258. £10 for an adult, £5 for a child, with all proceeds to each.
A man is fighting a council's refusal of his plans to build a house at a derelict site used unlawfully by young people. Robert Smith wants to remove an existing, partly demolished prefab bungalow and build a four-bedroom house at Church View on Church Road in Lingwood. According to planning documents, the bungalow was occupied until April 2000, but is now partially collapsed as a result of demolition work begun in February 2002. The remaining structure is used unlawfully by young people and subject to constant vandalism, fly-tipping and theft of materials and safety fencing, the application stated. However, planners at Broadland District Council refused the plans. They said the application provided insufficient information on the proposed impact on nutrient neutrality, a planning policy that prevents any new developments from increasing pollution, including nitrates and phosphates, in protected habitats such as rivers and wetlands. At first, Lingwood and Burlingham Parish Council objected to the plans, arguing that the proposed house was too high. But after Mr. Smith revised the plans, the Parish Council decided to support the application. Mr. Smith has now appealed the local authority's decision to the Planning Inspectorate. According to planning documents, permission to demolish the bungalow and build a new house was granted in 2001. A man then began to tear down the existing timber-framed bungalow in February 2002, but personal circumstances have not allowed him to complete the works of demolition and construction of the replacement house. A date for hearing Mr. Smith's appeal has not yet been set. In 2019, similar plans for the site were refused, and an appeal was also dismissed over its harmful effects on the character and appearance of the area, particularly the nearby St. Peter's Church, which is a listed building.
A drunk man bit the hand of a landlady who had tried to stop him driving away from a Norfolk pub, a court has heard. Wayne Ellis was very drunk, having been drinking with his girlfriend at the Feathers pub in Galston near Great Yarmouth. Danielle O'Donovan, prosecuting, said the landlady followed him out as she was concerned he was about to drive off. She said the 53-year-old then lashed out with his teeth and bit the landlady on her hand. The prosecutor said Ellis then bit the landlady's son as he went to protect his mother. The defendant was arrested at the scene after police were called following the incident on July 8, 2023. Ellis of Nuffield Close Galston is on trial, having denied two counts of assault, occasioning actual bodily harm. The jury of seven men and five women were told Ellis will claim he acted in lawful self-defence. But Miss O'Donovan, who opened the Crown's case on Monday, said it was for the prosecution to show that Ellis had acted unlawfully. The trial continues.
Chose plans to make me blue.
Now, Margaret and Desney have both brought a couple of articles to read today. It really could go under the umbrella of media, if you will, past and present. Margaret's going to start us off with a little trip down memory lane about some publications of years gone by. Margaret, over to you.
Thank you. Thank you. So today I'd like to share with you some memories of the publications for youngsters which were so popular in the 1950s. I remember School Friend, Girl and Girl's Crystal. And for the boys, there was Eagle, Boy's Own and I believe Hotspur. These were not comics. Those were Beano and Dandy. But they were entertaining, sometimes really educational, and certainly something to look forward to. The School Friend was my favourite, and I remember some of the stories even after all these years. One story was about two girls who had somehow become marooned on a desert island in the South Pacific. They were called Jill and Milani. Jill was English and had been shipwrecked, and Milani was there on one of her, was born on one of the neighbouring islands. Naturally, the story was of its time, and it seemed that Milani had been banished from her own island and tribe for some trumped-up crime. The strange fact that she spoke almost perfect English was explained by her learning it from an English trader who had at some time visited her own island. Then at some point they were joined by a little girl called Sally, who had presumably also been shipwrecked and washed up on one of the beaches.
They could have done with Hemsby in Shore Lifeboat.
They could have done, couldn't they? They really could, yes.
What a coincidence, yes. They all arrived on the same
That's
island.
Right, yes. Is there time for me to continue?
Please do. Lovely. We want to know the end.
Oh, right.
We want to know
right.
what happens.
Say no more. Right, so later Sally was reunited with her mother, who had been adopted by a white as a white queen on another island. And off they went to Australia. And all of this seems unlikely, and I should imagine it was. But equally unlikely was the fact that Jill and Milani had a pet leopard on their island. that they had no trouble feeding themselves and solving problems at the drop of a hat, or a coconut, could construct a raft made of tree trunks and go off into the deep seas in search of berries to cure a fatal tropical disease.
And choose eight of their favourite records at the same time.
And naturally, they were successful. We became very involved in these stories, and luckily for us, there was an area at the intersection of two quiet roads filled with bushes where my little friend and I could play desert islands to our heart's content. That was in Galston. Another story concerned three friends who called themselves the Silent Three. They were at a girls' boarding school and got up to all sorts of merry japes.
The language of the time.
They were not rebels, far from it, but were always creeping out of the dormitory in the middle of the night, disguised in their green robes with hoods, intent on solving mysteries, rescuing those in distress, or being accused of something, righting wrongs, and narrowly missing trouble, but eventually earning the gratitude of the stern but beloved headmistress and all the staff. I always took School Friend, and I won't embark on the adventures of Merry Matilda or Dilly Dream. An amusing sequel to all this came later when I was teaching at a local secondary school in the 1960s. I spotted a 13-year-old boy reading his Beano comic in one of the English lessons. I couldn't be blamed, actually, so I confiscated it, told him he could have it back at the end of school, but only if I'd had time to read it myself.
Excellent.
We all had a little laugh, and the incidents passed off pleasantly. He would be an elderly man now, and I just wonder if he ever remembered it.
Oh, I'm sure he does.
he does.
I tell you, kids today honestly don't know they're born, do they? What they miss. We can't really call ourselves the Silent Three in here, I'm pleased to say. So Desney's going to bring us up to date with some more fantastic adventures that are occurring on TV and radio and anywhere else we care to listen. Thank you, Margaret.
Lovely. I enjoyed that.
Yes, and here's some fantastic adventures happening this week, starting off with Strictly Come Dancing. Well, you won't be able to watch this if you haven't heard this as an online listener. You know, they get special treatment, these online listeners, because this show starts on Saturday night and not many people, or not everybody, I should say, really, have got their sticks by Saturday. So Tess and Claudia are back to see the 15 contestants matched up with their professional dancers. And I think these are largely people that we may not have heard of, but will be very fond of in just a few weeks. Mm. They'll seem like old friends. Now, on Sunday, on Channel E4 at 9 p.m, there is Married at First Sight. Now, this is a programme which seems to be the kind that is popular at the moment. The BBC are running one about Honeymoon Island or something, is it called?
Oh, sorry, way over and, my head, way past my bedtime.
And I think this is sort of somewhere on the same lines. And it says... It's the return of the experiment, to see whether science can help people fall in love. There you go. The first two couples marry at first sight. There you go. Mm. And a surprise transforms one groom's big day.
I bet it does.
Well, perhaps you'd prefer Waterloo Road, Andrew.
Oh,
it's
much,
the school
much,
drama
absolutely.
That returns for a new term when... The head teacher, Stella Lindsay Coulson, navigates a fresh set of challenges when her own estranged grandchildren arrive at the school. And, well, that's
And we thought the Desert Island stories were unbelievable.
And also, well, there's some more. The comic, John Richardson, is the new creative arts teacher, but he is not as squeaky clean as you might expect from a creative arts teacher or any other teacher, because there is a mention of cocaine.
Margaret, defend a teaching profession.
Oh, yes.
Here.
Oh, I shall have to think about this one.
Me too, Margaret. I do. And then David Tennant is in a new series called The Hack on Wednesday on ITV. It's the first of 7 episodes, starting at 9 p.m. And David Tennant, I thought when I read that, he keeps popping up at the moment, doesn't he? All over the place.
Oh, very busy.
But the Radio Times says that he is suddenly ubiquitous.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that probably means the same thing, but
yep.
I didn't think of it like that.
That's based on a true story, isn't
yes.
it? The series.
Yes, he is playing the journalist who... investigates and uncovers the scandal of the tabloid practically illegal hacking of voicemails of celebrities and politicians and public figures between 2002 and 2012.
Mm.
So he then takes his investigative piece to the Guardian editor, who is played by... Toby Jones, who was in the post office.
Another fine actor.
Yes, so that should be good with a couple of good actors there. And then All Creatures Great and Small returns on Channel 5. I don't think it's like it used to be on the BBC long ago. Who remembers that?
Great.
Anyway, this is the 6th series that they've had on Channel 5, so at least they've resurrected it and people do love it. And this is episode 1 out of 7, where Tristan returns from war.
Is that set in... No, you've answered my question there. It's current day, because that was set in about the 50s, wasn't it? The original series?
Yeah, well, if he's returning from war, yes. it must be the same thing, mustn't it?
Yeah.
And now for a bit of sport. Let me see. We've got football on Radio Norfolk from 2 p.m. on Saturday. That's a home match, Norwich versus Wrexham. Unfortunately, I won't be going because my son has decided to get married on that day.
And Norwich decided to play on a Saturday as well.
It's yeah, they decided to play on a Saturday at 3 p.m. No. Normal, perfectly normal.
They've got no business.
And I can't go. And they've got two of their best players injured this week. There's the two. Oh, Chris Gorham helps with this. Matthias Chris Gorham. That's not really exactly how you say it, but it's very, very close to the Danish. And Chris Gorham is, of course, the commentator. So they've enjoyed that similarity at Radio Norfolk. And the other injured is Chris as well, almost. Chrisone, he's the other injured person. And they're likely to be out for 6 and 8 weeks, respectively. So that's a bit of bad luck for us too. Anyway, other sport apart from football does exist. The World Athletics finishes this week. That comes from Tokyo. And you can see it on BBC Two on Saturday from 10:30 and on Sunday from 11 o'clock. The women's rugby semi-final kicks off on Saturday at 3:30. That's France versus England. This is the second semi-final. The first one will have been decided by the time this one takes place, but it doesn't take place until Friday, and we are recording this Thursday.
Looks like our girls are in with a good chance as well, doesn't it?
It Red does, Roses. Yes. They've been doing really, really well, haven't they?
Yep,
they have.
I haven't watched them all, but I've heard all the results. if you're into F1, it's the Azerbaijan F1 this weekend at the Baku City Circuit, and that will be on Sky Sports F1 on Saturday from 12:15 and on Sunday from 11:55. Football, rugby, World Athletics and F1. Yep, that's your lot. I hope you find
something
you'll enjoy.
So something
enjoying
for everybody there. Comics,
so.
TV, sport, drama. It's all here on Grapevine.
That is,
isn't it?
And now here we come with the second part of the news, and it's Desney to start us off.
A Norfolk MP says it is wonderful to see a petition on mass deportation he launched 2 days ago hit 300,000 signatures. Rupert Lowe, MP for Great Yarmouth and member of Restore Britain, is calling for offshore detention and the mass deportation of all illegal migrants in the UK. Its campaign has punched through 300,000 signatures in just over 48 hours after being launched on Monday morning. The petition, created by Mr. Lowe, calls on the government to establish offshore detention facilities to process and deport all illegal migrants. He praised people in his constituency for signing the petition. "Wonderful to see Great Yarmouth leading the way with support for mass deportations," Mr. Lowe said. "The capital of English common sense. We want the illegal migrants deported, not some of them, not most of them, all of them. I say send them home. I'm delighted to see that the good people of Great Yarmouth are backing me up." The surge in public support comes alongside a growing parliamentary push. 21 MPs have already signed Lowe's early day motion calling for a comprehensive national strategy to identify, detain and deport all individuals residing illegally in the United Kingdom. Mr. Lowe added, "Mass deportation is now mainstream political opinion. Every MP should now be asking themselves whose side they're on. There has never been such a disconnect between the people and their so-called representatives. Britain is demanding mass deportations. Parliament must finally listen. Send the illegals home." To sign the petition, see the link petitionparliament.uk/petitions/737105.
Deichmann, the German footwear specialist, will open the doors of its brand new branch in Marketgate Shopping Centre on Tuesday, October the 7th. The shop will take over the Mall's former Select store and employ 10 workers, including assistant, supervisor and manager roles. Deichmann's new store will feature men's, women's and children's footwear, including the well-known labels such as Adidas, Nike, Skechers, Puma and Fila. The retailer operates a best price guarantee across all branded shoes, offering to match or refund the difference if customers find an identical pair cheaper elsewhere. Deichmann was founded over 100 years ago in Essen, Germany, and currently boasts over 49,000 employees and about 4,700 shops in 34 countries.
Almost £14 million is being spent to bring two dozen new electric double-decker buses to Norfolk's roads. The investment by Norfolk County Council and First Bus will add to the county's current fleet of 76 buses, as well as funding upgrades at depots in both Norwich and Great Yarmouth. The £13.8 million investment, of which £8.9 million is being funded by First Bus and the remainder by a grant from the Council's Norfolk Bus Service Improvement Plan, will see the new buses operating in Norwich and Great Yarmouth by autumn next year. The Caister Road Depot in Great Yarmouth will be upgraded to support 10 electric buses serving Service 8, connecting the James Paget Hospital to Caister via the town centre. Meanwhile, the Vulcan Road Depot in Norwich will accommodate 14 electric buses for routes 28, 36, 37 and 38, linking communities in Thorpe Marriott, Horsford, Mulbarton and Ives Road with the city centre. Councillor Graham Plant, Cabinet Member for Highways, Infrastructure and Transport, said it is a landmark moment for public transport in Norfolk. Construction at the Great Yarmouth Depot is scheduled to begin later this year, with all vehicles expected to be in service by autumn 2026. Steve Morphew, County Councillor for Catton Grove, said electric buses have been a real hit with passengers across the county. The coming devolution of powers to a new mayor offers never-before-available opportunities to create a truly comprehensive public transport network, he said. Every piece in putting together that jigsaw is an important step forward. Piers Marlowe, Managing Director of First Bus East of England, added, "We're really pleased that more people across Norfolk will soon be able to enjoy the many benefits of electric buses, and we're proud to be working with Norfolk County Council to make this possible. This investment in new vehicles and depot infrastructure is another important step towards a cleaner, healthier future for everyone who lives, works and travels in Norfolk."
Works to improve coastal assets are due to begin this week following previous delays. A scheme of works to replace vital navigation markers along the coast between Hopton near Great Yarmouth and Lowestoft had been due to start last month. But the two-week scheme of work to replace the important safety markers on coastal structures was delayed due to significant wind and wave conditions. The works to remove and install the navigational markers between Hopton and Ness Point in Lowestoft, originally scheduled for August, is now intended to run from Wednesday, September the 17th, for about 2 weeks. East Suffolk Council's coastal management team appointed Red Seven Marine to remove the existing navigation markers on the end of groins and install aids to the navigational markers on new piles. There will be no impact on access to the beaches during this time, as works will be completed from a barge at sea. Mark Packard, East Suffolk Council's Cabinet Member for the Planning and Coastal Management, said, "And although this will cause minimal disruption to beachgoers, we ask that members of the public avoid approaching the vessels, machinery and equipment, the sea and the area where work is taking place."
An East Anglian accountancy firm has welcomed an intake of 20 new trainees across its offices in Norfolk and Suffolk. The latest cohort of school and college leavers, graduates and interns, have joined Lovewell Blake, who will embark on professional qualifications from day one. Those joining from school and college start the Association of Accounting Technicians, AAT, while graduate trainees will study for the Institute of Chartered Accountants in England and Wales, ICAEW, onto which AAT qualified staff can also progress. Those starting their career with one of Lovewell Blake's tax teams will study towards their Association of Taxation Technicians, ATT, leading to a Chartered Tax Advisor, CTA, professional qualification. It is always a highlight of our year to welcome the new cohort of trainees as they embark on their career in accountancy, said Lovewell Blake's senior partner, Simon Watson. As a firm, we are committed to training the next generation of professionals. We are proud of how we nurture talent from the very start of someone's career to the highest level. 83% of our partners and managers have been promoted internally, and it may well be that we have future senior Lovewell Blake people amongst this year's group of trainees. I wish all of our new entrants every success, and look forward to watching them achieve qualifications and progress in their careers. Lovewell Blake has offices in Norwich, Great Yarmouth, Halesworth and Bury St Edmunds, serving more than 10,000 business and personal clients.
Local charities in East Anglia are set to receive more than £115,000 in grant funding. The grants, part of the East of England Co-op's Community Care Fund, aim to support community cohesion and integration. Since 2020, the Community Cares Fund has supported more than 146,000 local people in the latest funding round, and 32 projects will benefit. One such project is the Norfolk City Community Sports Foundation's Duncan Club, which received £5,000 to support people with dementia and their carers. Declan Souter, Funding and Impact Manager at Norwich City Community Sports Foundation, said the funding will allow participants to stay both physically and socially active in our community. Another project, New Roots Integration, also received £5,000 to enhance its support for refugees and asylum seekers. Angela Carpenter, Community Support Lead, said, whether it's by creating access to social activities, offering support into education or work, improving well-being, or providing people with advice and support, each project plays a part in building a fairer, more supportive community. The East of England Co-op supported more than 700 charities across East Anglia last year.
A sailing club has celebrated hosting its first Broadland Youth Regatta. This event at Rollesby Broad Sailing Club on August the 30th attracted 90 competitors from 8 clubs across Norfolk and Suffolk. The day was sunny, with steady southwesterly winds creating ideal conditions for the 16 races held on the day. Competitors aged between 7 and 19 showcased varying levels of skill and experience, with some making their open regatta debut. Spectators cheered as the boats, divided into 4 fleets, raced across the water. Lasers and the Fast Fleet took over after the first 2 races, with the RS Phoebus making the most of their spinnakers. As the day progressed, gusts of wind led to several capsizes, with the number 6 buoy proving particularly challenging. One incident saw an RS Fever crew fall overboard, only to be rescued by another RS Fever team. This act of sportsmanship earned them an award from Rollesby Broad Sailing Club for embodying the club's spirit of camaraderie. Snowflake Sailing Club won the interclub competition for the centenary salva. Waveney and Alton Broad Yacht Club were second, and Horning Sailing Club were third. Hickling Broad Sailing Club came fourth, Norfolk Broads Yacht Club came fifth, Beccles Amateur Sailing Club came sixth, Norfolk Punt Club came seventh, and Rollesby Broad Sailing Club came eighth. The Whelpton Cup, for the most successful double-handed boat, was awarded to Beccles Sam and Freya in their Norfolk One design dinghy. The Lady Mayhew Trophy for Endeavour went to Jolly Brewster and Henry Long from Beccles in their RS Fever. The day was deemed a success, with the club thanking its volunteers, including Commodore Rhiannon Alger and lead race official Tamsin Highfield, for their dedication. The event was supported by local businesses, including Cox's Boatyard and Marine Tech. Ben Fallett, speaking on behalf of the Norfolk and Suffolk Boating Association, expressed gratitude to all involved.
Mr Lowe's push to improve constituency town centres. Mr Lowe's success in garnering national support for new measures to control mass immigration comes as he announced the launch of a new project to help restore Great Yarmouth and Galston's high streets. He's asking his constituents to write to him and share their ideas on how the situation in either town can be improved. The MP wants to ultimately improve footfall, boost retail and the local economy, fight illicit business activity, and target and reduce antisocial behaviour. To share your thoughts with him, email rupert.lowe.mp@parliament.uk.
Several rail services to and from Norwich were suspended due to a fallen tree. Greater Anglia said the line was blocked between Brundle and Brundle Gardens and caused significant travel disruption on Monday. Rail services between Norwich and Lowestoft and Norwich and Great Yarmouth were suspended as a result. Rail services through these stations were cancelled, delayed or revised, but the line has now been cleared and normal service has resumed.
An animal that touched the hearts of everyone has died at a zoo near Great Yarmouth. Nima, the female snow leopard, has died at Thrigby Hall Wildlife Gardens. The zoo confirmed that despite initially responding well to treatment, Nima developed an infection. It said, "Despite every effort from our veterinary and keeper teams, the very difficult decision was made to peacefully euthanise her. In her time here, she successfully raised 5 cubs with our male snow leopard, Moen, making a significant contribution to the global conservation of this rare and magnificent species. She was 13 years old and arrived at the park in 2013 from Zoo Plankenendale in Antwerp, Belgium. She was a truly special animal, calm, gentle, observant, often watching over her surroundings from her favourite perches. At times she showed a playful side, reminding us all of her unique personality," the zoo added. "Nima touched the hearts of everyone who met her and will be greatly missed by all our staff and visitors alike."
Police solved fewer than 1 in 10 of every burglary in Norfolk last year, it can be revealed. Figures show that of 2,582 break-ins reported to the force, 2,360 went unsolved. In 2/3 of cases, officers were not even able to identify a suspect. The county has seen a rise in both business and residential burglaries, and the detection rate will raise fresh questions over the performance of the police. The Norfolk burglary detection rates, which have emerged following a Freedom of Information request, show that just 110 cases led to suspects being charged or summonsed in the year ending June 2025. In a further 18 cases, individuals were charged with alternative offences, while 16 were dealt with through community resolution outcomes. 8 led to offenders being issued with cautions, while some other burglary offences were taken into consideration during sentencing for other crimes. The biggest obstacles encountered by police investigating break-ins were lack of evidence, while in other cases offenders were too young to be prosecuted or key witnesses were too ill to give evidence. Chief Constable Paul Sanford said, "In the last 12 months, burglary offences have increased by 5.3% following a 3-year decline. Even with the increase, which equates to 101 offences, Norfolk has the second lowest burglary rate in the country. We know this is an intrusive crime, and I appreciate statistics provide little comfort to people who have been the victim of burglary. But we investigate these crimes robustly and relentlessly target offenders to prevent further crimes from happening." National Police guidance says forces should prioritise attending the scene of a domestic break-in within an hour of the report, increasing the chances of solving the case. All victims of residential burglaries in Norfolk are visited except on rare occasions. There can be exceptional circumstances when this doesn't happen. Overall crime in Norfolk has fallen by 5.4%.
A major milestone in community volunteering was celebrated at a park run event. Galston Cliffs Park Run, held on Saturday, September the 6th, announced that nationally Park Run will reach its 1 millionth new volunteer. Stephen Kivlochen, run director, began the morning by thanking volunteers and marking the occasion. Paul Sinton Hewitt, founder of Park Run, said, "Volunteering isn't just about roles and rosters. It's about connection, generosity and community. It's about finding purpose on a Saturday and Sunday morning, making a new friend, helping someone feel seen for the first time in weeks." A total of 404 people took part in the event, with 53 achieving personal bests. Milestone runners included Martin Merriweather, Faye Buxton, Rebecca Lawrence and Dominic Stone, who each completed their 25th park run. James Losyke and John McLean reached their 50th. Daniela Page ran her 100th. And Stephen Helston marked his 300th. There were 41 first-timers, including 11 people completing their first ever park run. Josh Smith finished first in 16 minutes and 42 seconds. He was followed by John Hill in 18 minutes and 2 seconds and Morgan Lingley in 18 minutes and 8 seconds. The first female finisher was Colleen Nicole Mukaya.
A bid to build 10 houses at a berry farm in the Broads has been refused amid concerns over noise. Sean Charlton of Berries Direct Farming Limited was seeking prior approval to change the use of 3 farm buildings to housing at Rectory Farm on Low Road in Martham. Planners at Great Yarmouth Borough Council have refused the application. They said the proposal was not acceptable in terms of design, flooding and the suitability of the location. The site is a working berry farm accessed off a track to the north of Low Road, a single narrow country lane with limited passing places. There were 2 objections to the plans, sharing concerns over highway safety and surface water flooding on Low Road. An environmental services officer at the Borough Council objected, as the site is a working farm with the potential for noise impacting any possible future residents of the proposed houses. A previous bid to change the use of agricultural buildings at the site to 5 houses was refused in 2022.
A young boy with a chronic condition and his sister have raised over £1,300 for a good cause. 4-year-old Alfie Jackson, who receives treatment for his brittle asthma on the children's ward at the James Paget Hospital, and his sister Chloe, carried out a sponsored litter pick around their hometown of Halesworth. They collected 15 bags of rubbish, with the funds raised being split between the hospital children's ward and Asthma Plus Lung UK. The donation will upgrade the James Paget's playroom furniture.
RAF veterans' trip to Norfolk and Suffolk Aviation Museum. Michael Atkins was just 15 when he applied to serve in the Royal Air Force. For the next 24 years, he served as a navigation technician across the world, working on aircraft navigation, attack and defence systems. Posted for his basic training in Wales, Mr. Atkins went on to serve in Germany, Singapore, Northern Ireland, the Arctic and Malaysia, and served with a joint European squadron which developed the Harrier jump jet. And now at the age of 83, Ritson Lodge Care Home in Hopton has organised a VIP trip to the Norfolk and Suffolk Aviation Museum in Flixton for Mr. Atkins to relive memories and view aircraft he once worked on. Some of the planes included on his VIP tour were a Hawker Hunter and a Canberra. Mr. Atkins was also awarded a lifetime membership from the museum so he can visit any time. The trip was organised by Kimberly Holman as part of the care home's Wish Tree project, which is aimed to make the wishes of residents come true through activities and trips. Operations manager Katie Hughes said, "Kimberly is fantastic at making our residents' wishes come true on a regular basis. And we will add Michael's experience to Ritson Lodge's Wish Tree." The museum was opened in 1976 by a group of enthusiasts to preserve and promote the history of aviation in East Anglia. Earlier this year, the site near Bungay welcomed a Jaguar to its hangar. Mr. Atkins took a keen interest in it on his tour.
A national horse sanctuary with sites in Norfolk has launched a plea to the government over bonfire night festivities. Red Wings is asking people to sign a petition that would see a reduction in the maximum permitted noise level of fireworks from 120 to 90 decibels. The horse charity, which has sites in Aylsham, Hopton and Caldecott near Great Yarmouth, will launch the petition on Tuesday with 50 days to go before bonfire night. It is asking anyone who would like to see improved regulations of fireworks to sign. Red Wings has lost three of its own rescued horses, residential in the past. Helen Whiteleg, Red Wings campaign and policy manager, said, "We know there is a widespread support for calls to tighten fireworks regulations, and we hope that this is a positive way for people to make their voice heard and appeal to policymakers." Red Wings is not alone in having lost much-loved horses to fireworks, and the current lack of regulation also has far wider impacts, from pets, livestock and wildlife to people living with PTSD or sensory issues like autism. "We fully appreciate that many people enjoy fireworks, but more balanced regulation is desperately needed. The sound of fireworks, more than the light, is believed to be the main issue for horses, which is perhaps no surprise, as animals have much more sensitive hearing than people. And research suggests that horses' ears amplify the sounds by around 10 to 20 decibels.
Prior Power Solutions begins exporting products to Brazil. A rapidly expanding firm in Great Yarmouth has broken into the South American oil and gas market. Price Power Solutions, based at Gapton Hall Industrial Estate, has begun exporting the nitrogen pumps it manufactures to Rio de Janeiro in Brazil. The pumps are used in the oil and gas industries to suppress gases, liquids and other dangerous elements. "Brazil has been on our radar for some time," said the firm's global sales manager, Adrian Sharman. "It is an area experiencing significant growth with regard to oil and gas. Production is projected to increase by over 30% by 2030, and we are seeing a lot of demand for our products in the region." Prior Power Solutions has invested £2 million over the past 2 years to grow its fleet of nitrogen pumps for medium and long-term rental. This year, the company has exported units to Australia, North America, Asia, Africa and Europe. "Our nitrogen pumps have always been highly regarded in the oil and gas industry, but now we are expanding our customer base and international penetration with inquiries coming in weekly from new customers and new regions," Mr. Sharman added. Taking an agile approach and offering brand new products on a rental basis has opened up many opportunities for us with customers where capital expenditure is restricted or unavailable. "We're also able to offer rental customers the latest in clean energy technology, with the Brazil-bound nitrogen pump featuring a Volvo Penta engine which meets the strict Stage 5 emissions standard. Prior Power Solutions designs and builds service equipment for oil and gas wells. It also offers repair, parts and maintenance services for equipment in the oil and gas, renewables and marine sectors.
Well, that's all for this week's recording, which is copyright 2025 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accept responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. Thanks to Margaret and Desney for reading today, and a reminder of our website address, which is grapevinegy.org, where the latest edition is always available, and also a contact button for getting in touch. And we'd love to hear from you if you have any news or any views on our programmes. Next week, your newsreaders will be, well, Margaret again, if she's made it off that desert island, along with Julie and, of course, our Dusty, known to you all as the Fallen Angels. So we look forward to welcoming you then for much more of your local news. In the meantime, from all of us at Grapevine, stay safe, stay well, and thanks for listening. Bye for now.